Setlist in association with 7 Digital.
This week, the mega saga of Mega Upload. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
This is another of our special episodes to mark the 20th anniversary of CMU.
We've had a flurry of these specials. Anyone would think that we've suddenly realised we're almost at the end of our 20th year and we need to squeeze them all in because that was the original pitch.
It was. Also, you have been unavailable for an annoying amount of time.
I have been doing stuff elsewhere that has made it difficult for us to do normal editions of Setlist, although not a lot has been happening in the music industry in the last couple of weeks, as it happens. Just the same old tedious nonsense. So hopefully...
Yeah, but this isn't going out for a while, so something massive might have happened.
That is true. By the time you hear this, one of the major record companies will have gone bankrupt.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, some major new streaming service will have dominated, and I will sound stupid.
Yes.
But anyway...
These episodes are supposed to be evergreen, so stop drifting into current events.
It's true.
Because today...
Or even made-up current events.
Because today, we are going to be talking about, oh, it was all supposed to be so easy. You take it offline, you take the founders to court, you put them in prison, everything's done and probably be over in a couple of weeks. No! Mega Upload, taken down in 2012. What has happened? Nothing.
Yeah, a lot has happened.
A lot of it.
But ultimately nothing has happened.
Yeah, we've written a lot of stories which ultimately conclude in nothing has happened.
So this edition of Setlist, this 20th anniversary special, could either be the shortest or the longest, depending what route you want to take.
The amount of nothing that has happened, we've struggled to condense it down into a short enough space. So we're going to get through the big bullet points of nothing that have happened in the last, I mean, getting on for a decade, 7 years, isn't it? And we'll see how we do with that.
Yeah, talking about things that might happen before this podcast goes out, they better not jail him in the 2 or 3 weeks it takes for this podcast to go out.
I think we're safe.
I think it's going to be stuck in no man's land for some time yet.
So shall we talk about what we're talking about and who he is?
Yeah, so let's talk about Mega Upload, Kim.com. But I suppose before we do that, we should reminisce about the time when digital lockers were the piracy threat of the moment.
Yes, somewhere in between the fad for P2P file sharing and the fad for stream ripping, which, I mean, that's a fad that continues. But let's call it a fad, because that's what it says here. We had digital lockers. They were going to be the downfall of all civilization.
Yeah, so there was a number of digital lockers. I suppose Dropbox is the one that has survived, although that wasn't really part of it.
Yeah, and that although that has been talked about in piracy terms, it set itself off as a kind of a very much for business, whereas other things, I mean, some things explicitly set themselves up as places to put your music. Mega Upload, well, it was aimed at just regular consumers to store their stuff with a sort of nod and a wink towards your stuff might be films and music.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Because that's part of the legal dispute. Yeah, so as you say, in the mid to late 2000s, people started putting music up on digital lockers. And actually, way before we were really talking about Mega Upload, in Europe, a lot of the conversation was around Rapid Share. Do you remember Rapid Share?
Yeah.
And that people started putting their music collections up on RapidShare. So rather than having a P2P network where people were actually pulling the music off your computer, you'd put it into the cloud, as we'd started to say by this point, onto a service like RapidShare. And then other people would share links. And then like message boards and search engines emerged and Facebook groups where people would share the links to where you can access the content on these digital lockers. And then the music industry piled in and they were like, all these digital lockers, they should be putting filters up that stop the sharing of music in this way. And various digital lockers were targeted, either actually with litigation or the threat of litigation, but none of them as big as Mega Upload. And I suppose of them all, ultimately, as you alluded to, Mega Upload probably did the most to suggest that you might want to share content that is sitting in your lockers and that you might want to put music and video, other people's music and video, in your lockers. There was also another side to Mega Upload, which was Mega Video. It was, in essence, a YouTube competitor as well. It had a video streaming platform. Although, interestingly, from early on, the Mega Video side had a subscription option, which if you wanted to access longer videos, because at this point, YouTube was still putting a cap on how long videos could be, whereas Mega Video were allowing you to put, longer videos on there. But then you'd have to pay Mega Video some money to access the longer videos, even though most of the content that was up there, I mean, I suppose, like any digital locker or user-generated content platform, some people were using these services legitimately to store or share their own content, their own files, their own videos, their own audio. But the platform was swimming with other people's music, other people's movies, which is why, slowly but surely, the music industry started to take aim at this company, Mega Upload, and its larger-than-life founder,
yes,
Mr. Kim.com, formerly Kim Schmidt, but changed his name to Kim.com. Although, kind of the first time we started reporting on Mega Upload wasn't because the music industry were making legal threats against Mega Upload.
No,
it was the other way around.
Entirely the other way around, because in order to promote itself, Mega Upload created this song, the Mega Song, and it got lots of celebrities to appear on it. Will.i.am was on there, Kanye West, Diddy, Snoop Dogg, Lil Jon, Jamie Foxx, I think Macy Gray might have been in there as well.
And
there
somehow...
there were lots of people on there. They'd convinced lots of major label signed artists to appear in this song. And Universal did not like that and submitted a takedown notice against it on YouTube.
Yes, so the Mega Song, Mega Upload, if you've ever heard that song, I was just talking about it, it'll be stuck in your head now for the rest of the day. Maybe we'll put a little snippet in here
somewhere. No, don't. I don't want to hear it.
To remind people about the Mega Song, although we'd have to do some critical analysis again to justify putting the song in there.
Let's just not put it in. Just the snippet that still exists in my head all this time later is enough.
So the song was basically promoting that the digital locker side of Mega Upload, it wasn't promoting that people should go on to the digital locker platform and download other people's content. It was selling it as this is a great place to store and share your own content.
Yeah.
And the idea was that it's faster and you have more capacity. So that's what this superstar-filled video was promoting. Kim.com also appeared in this video and seemingly had just schmoozed all these pop stars into appearing in this video. But already behind the scenes, the record companies were concerned about both the sharing of content on the digital locker and all the unlicensed content on Mega Video, and the allegation that more so than any other user-generated content platform or digital locker, maybe Mega Upload was encouraging people to deliberately share other people's music and videos because that was then bringing more people to the site. So there was already some legal concerns starting to build behind the scenes at the big movie studios and the big record companies. So yeah, I think when this Mega Song popped up, and they didn't just put it on their own video platform, as you say, they put it up on YouTube, I think Universal were quite pissed off that this site that they were starting behind the scenes to lobby and litigate against had seemingly signed up half of their big name artists who were all singing about how great it was. They tried to issue a takedown notice to have the video removed off YouTube, and I think for a time it was removed.
Yeah.
But then Kim.com then said Universal didn't have the right to remove that video and it was an abuse of the takedown system.
Yeah, well, there was accusations that Universal had its own bit of the YouTube back end where it could go in and delete whatever files it wanted, although YouTube then denied that. And actually, we never got any answer to this because it was only a few weeks later that the big coordinated US effort to take down Mega Upload took place, and with a much bigger legal fight on his hands, Kim.com dropped his action against Universal, which I think that's the biggest shame of this whole thing.
We never had the Mega Song case in court. So this is January 2012, and we've reported on a lot of copyright infringement action over the years in CMU.
We have.
Lots of piracy stories. Lots of websites and platforms that were targeted by the music industry and the movie industry as killing entertainment as we know it and driving the record industry out of business. But in some ways, this initial swoop on Mega Upload, even though it kickstarted 7 years of non-action, the day it happened, it was very dramatic. Because this wasn't Universal Music firing back with a lawsuit or one of the Hollywood movie studios firing back with a lawsuit. This was a criminal action. And this was the American authorities, supported by the music and movie industries, swooping on this company and in America seizing its servers and its domains. And then elsewhere in the world, because Kim.com and most of his other management team members were not living in the US, a big chunk of them, including Kim.com himself, were in New Zealand. And while in America, they were swooping and seizing servers and basically disconnecting the Mega Upload domains, in New Zealand, they were arresting .com and his colleagues, putting them into jail and actually charging them with criminal copyright infringement. And there's some other stuff about money laundering and racketeering thrown in there for extra fun time.
Yes, and they froze assets in Hong Kong as well. Another big part of this that rumbled on for a long, long time.
Yeah, so a multinational action that all happened on one day. So this was front page news, not just music business news, not just music news. It was across the press entirely because this coordinated action with the servers being disconnected, the domains being seized, so the whole business just stopped one day. So if you'd been storing your files on Mega Upload, this was another element to this story, then just out of the blue, you could no longer access your files. Meanwhile, they were trying to grab all the money in Hong Kong. And I suppose for the music movie industry's perspective, almost that was the most important bit, because what subsequently followed on this was civil litigation. The lawsuits did then follow.
Yes.
And so the music and movie industries are hoping to get access to the cash that Mega Upload made. And so it was important they seized the money, so that didn't just all disappear and get spent. But I suppose the bit that's had the most attention since then was the criminal side actually charging .com and his colleagues with criminal conduct in New Zealand, but with the aim to get him and his colleagues to America to face those charges in an American courtroom.
Yes, and it's there was a lot of planning in that multinational swoop on Mega Upload. They presumably thought that would be the difficult bit, and then we'll just ship him over to the States and get him convicted. But yeah, he's still in New Zealand. Sorry to give spoilers on this story, but that extradition is yet to happen. Despite the fact several times now he's lost cases trying to block his extradition, he's still right there in New Zealand, definitely not extradited.
And the funny thing is, immediately after this very high-profile raid, when .com and his other colleagues were actually locked up in New Zealand and negotiating bail, and for a time it looked like they might not get bail because the American prosecutors said immediately, right, we're going to begin extradition proceedings. And the initial talk was that was going to take a few months. And they were pushing for .com, etc. to stay in jail during that time, fearing that he might flee New Zealand if they didn't do that. He did ultimately get bail. I mean, it's just as well he ultimately got bail. Otherwise, he would have been in prison for a very long time waiting for the extradition process to go through the motions. Although it has to be said that .com and his legal team have had a role in ensuring that this extradition has dragged on and on and on and on by exploiting every possible technicality that they can along the way.
There have been a great many other legal battles along the way. A lot of them trying to dismiss the entire criminal case entirely by various means. They argued that the wrong type of permit had been used, so the raid on Kim.com's home was illegal. They said that the US authorities had broken the law by taking evidence back to the US when actually it should have stayed in New Zealand until .com and his colleagues were extradited. They also said that Kim.com and his colleagues had been spied on without the proper authority. None of these, although they have had certain small wins along the way, none of them have derailed the case to the point of getting it gone.
No, they've employed every possible technicality that they can. And yeah, as you say, at some points, various courts, mainly in New Zealand, have agreed with some of their complaints about the process that the American prosecutors and their counterparts in New Zealand went through immediately before, during, and immediately after the raid. But none of those have managed to scupper America's core case to try and get .com extradited. And it has to be said, if you look at the arguments that are actually at the heart of the extradition case, and who knew we would ever become such experts on the US-New Zealand extradition treaty, but there have been various hearings looking at that extradition request beyond the technicalities you've already mentioned, because .com keeps losing, but then appealing. So we've had a number of court hearings, and the core argument regarding the extradition is whether or not Kim.com et al. Can be extradited under the US-New Zealand extradition treaty for something which at its heart is about copyright infringement. Because copyright infringement in itself is not covered by the extradition treaty. So if it was just a copyright case, then the general consensus is under the treaty between the US and New Zealand, Kim.com could not be extradited to an American courtroom just to hear even criminal copyright charges. Obviously, copyright cases, more often than not, are actually civil proceedings. They're not criminal proceedings. Although there is criminal copyright infringement, it does kick in when infringement is at an industrial level and done for profit. So that's not out of the ordinary. But the general consensus is that copyright, even criminal copyright infringement on its own, is not enough to extradite Kim.com. So the American prosecutor's argument is that the conduct that .com and his team are accused of, which resulted in copyright infringement, was sufficient to constitute fraud, because fraud or conspiracy to defraud is covered by the extradition treaty. So that's what the core argument in court has centered on. Forget all those technicalities, although there were lots of them. It's all about, can we say that whatever it is that .com, etc. may or may not have done, because obviously that's to be assessed in an American courtroom. We've not even got onto assessing who's telling the truth yet. The question is about the legal argument. And of the allegations that have been put forward, do they constitute conspiracy to defraud? Because if they do, then the extradition treaty between the US and New Zealand would apply. And at every stage so far, despite Kim.com and his lawyers in New Zealand and his lawyers also in America generally being very bullish throughout in saying, we've got the killer arguments and we've got corrupt prosecutors in New Zealand and corrupt prosecutors in the US, and .com had no time for Obama, or especially Joe Biden, because it happened on their watch.
Yeah.
In the early days of Trump rising up, .com was a bit of a fan of Trump, but I mean, Trump hasn't intervened to call this off as yet. But at each term, the New Zealand courts have basically concluded, yes, there is enough substance in these allegations for there to be a case for fraud, and therefore extradition should be possible. But the appeals continue and continue and continue. So originally we were told, oh, the extradition should be done within a few months. And then it was like, oh, maybe 18 months. And then it was like, well, maybe 3 years. And it just keeps dragging and dragging. And you get to the point, will he ever be taken to the US to face these charges in American court? There was one point quite early on where he was basically saying he would go voluntarily if they promised there wouldn't be jail time at the end of it.
Yeah.
Although I don't think that offer's been on the table for a very long time as of now. And generally, .com and his legal team still say they're optimistic as they go through these very final stages of appeal that we are currently at. But in court, in the main, despite delays and technicalities, etc., everything has pretty much gone in the favour of the American prosecutors. So that does suggest that ultimately the end of this very long saga is that there will be extradition. Although if that happens, we then will start a whole new saga. Because then, as I say, the actual allegations of what did or didn't happen and the conversations that did or didn't happen and whether or not that actually constitutes criminal copyright infringement, money laundering and or racketeering under American law, all of that is still to be discussed in the American courtroom.
Yes, and the civil actions that are due to follow. Because as you said, the music and movie companies have already launched their own civil actions, which actually they were hoping would get started a bit sooner. And ultimately it was argued that they should happen after the criminal case. But that means we're going to have the big... I mean, assuming that they don't finally manage to extradite him and then they just have a little trial in a corner somewhere, it could still be big news story. And then you've got the civil actions after that. So it's still, there's so much further to go with this. Because as you know, we've been a bit flippant about nothing happening in the last 7 years. But a lot has happened to get us no closer to the start of what's actually supposed to be happening.
Yeah, so that civil litigation keeps getting postponed because, as you say, everyone pretty much agrees, and I think even deep down the music companies and movie companies agree, there's no point having a civil litigation with kin.com in absence before the criminal case. But each time they postpone the civil action, they like postpone it for 6 months or 12 months. So then it keeps having to go back to court every 6 to 12 months to agree that they're going to further postpone it. But I suppose the record companies, movie studios have seen the money that was frozen, particularly in Hong Kong, and they're like, well, we want to get to this eventually because we know there is a pile of cash. I mean, .com has at various points been allowed to access some of that money, mainly to cover his legal costs.
Yes. Although he got some physical assets back. He got some cars back, didn't he? He posted that picture with his cars in a... in his typical, well, like you say, larger-than-life fashion.
Yeah, there is that thing with him on social, and he's very active on social, where half the time he's showing photos of a very lavish lifestyle and the other half pleading poverty.
Yeah.
And that's why he needs more money. I don't know which of those is true. But there is, nevertheless, still a big pile of cash for the music industry and the movie industry to go after. And I suppose the reason why we continue to cover this, and I think we more than anyone else in the world have been covering this story step by step by step, even though, as we've just admitted, actually... if we're being honest, not a lot has actually happened despite all of those steps. But the reason why we continue to cover it is if it ever gets to an American courtroom, what defense is kin.com and his team going to present? They're going to present the safe harbor defense.
Mm.
So although this story is getting to the point where it all feels like it was something that happened a long time ago, and certainly the idea of digital lockers being this hub of piracy that the record industry are bothered about, that all seems quite old and antiquated now. But this is at its heart a safe harbor case, because what Mega Upload argue is that on their digital locker and on their video site, they had a takedown system so that copyright owners could complain if their content was being shared either through the digital locker or if it had been posted and was being streamed on the video site. And just like YouTube, they would say, just like Dropbox, they would say, we had systems in place to deal with this content. So if you're saying that Mega Upload and Mega Video were liable for copyright infringement, then so are all of those other digital locker and user-generated content websites, because we have safe harbor protection under American copyright law. The argument will go. And so if it does ever get to court, it will be a fascinating safe harbor case that will represent all of those arguments about the liabilities or not of websites, digital lockers, user-generated content platforms when it comes to the infringement of their users.
Yes, although the argument, the counter-argument, will focus on how good or bad or non-existent that takedown system actually was. And also there's the accusation that Mega Upload colluded with certain uploaders of infringing content. In fact, there's the accusation that they paid some people to upload infringing content. So we were really kind of in on it, and then you would lose all safe harbor protection. There was also the claim that, I don't think they ever named them, it was a mega upload exec described them all as modern day pirates. And I think we can guess which one of them it was, allegedly. But yeah, the counter argument will be that it was a shoddy takedown system, and actually mega upload was encouraging people to upload illegal content.
Yeah, that's the allegation. And of course, in the 7 years that this has all been going through the extradition process, we have had some clarity on the liabilities of internet platforms in the US under safe harbor. No change to the law, despite all the safe harbor debate as part of the European Copyright Directive. The US Copyright Office did a review of safe harbor, is yet to publish as we record this podcast. But in court, we have seen mainly internet service providers who have been shown to have deliberately shoddy takedown systems, having safe harbor protection taken away from them. So actually, arguably, we have a bit more clarity on that now than we did in 2012. And it may well be that those cases get shown. I mean, I suppose it has to be said, if they can prove that money was changing hands and that people were being paid to upload copyright infringing content, then whatever the intricacies of safe harbor and liabilities, that surely is enough to say, okay, you don't have safe harbor protection for that side of what you are doing. But obviously all of that is to be proven in court if it ever gets there. Plus, we do have the slight ambiguities around how safe harbor works and the allegation that sites like this will always use, which is, how are we any different to any other digital locker or any other video sharing platform? So if it does get to court, it will be interesting. You've mentioned that there are various other strands to this story. And I mean, one that I found particularly interesting back in America, and in some ways the less flippant side of this story, I mentioned how on that day in 2012, out of the blue, Mega Upload was just turned off.
Yeah.
And usually you see that coming, because usually there is litigation or there is some sort of warning. But the authorities just swooped and turned off the servers. Now, if all you've been using Mega Upload and Mega Video for was to share other people's content, then I suppose screw you. I mean, it wasn't your content to start with. And also, presumably, you probably nabbed that content from somewhere else to start with. But what if you were genuinely using it to store your own or share your own content? And that there were a bunch of people who were genuinely doing that. They were using it like a Dropbox. And they lost their content without warning. And when those people came forward and said, well, can we get our content back? It has to be said that the prosecutors in America haven't been particularly helpful towards those people. Neither of the music companies or the movie companies. The courts have been quite sympathetic, but not in a way to help. So there is one guy, isn't there, who I think filmed local community or school sports and stuff like that. And all of his files were sitting on his Mega Upload account. He didn't have backups of a big chunk of them. And then the Electronic Frontier Foundation took up his cause. And he's sort of been the front man of that. I don't know how many people actually lost their own content on there. But even if it's just a few, actually, that does seem to be very unfair, because those people were doing something entirely legitimate. They were paying for a digital locker. And for the prosecution to turn around, as they have done, to say, oh, well, the terms and conditions of Mega Upload told you that you should keep a backup of everything you upload, which they did. But it's like, but that's kind of not the point, is it?
Yeah.
You have a digital locker because, well, I mean, you're told the reason you should put your stuff on digital lockers is they have all these sort of backups that you could never have locally. So your files are safer on some sort of cloud service than they are on a hard disk back home. And prosecutors have been, nothing to do with us. And then the music and movie industries, I think, also behaved a bit badly in this regard, in that they kind of said, well, we've no objection to these people getting their legitimate files back, but we do object to every possible way in which that could be done.
Yes, because it was sort of suggested like, well, if you go in and just get out the legitimate files and give those back, and then we'll leave the illegal ones on the servers. But I mean, that's, you can't do that. Really, the only way you'd be able to do it would be to just say, we're going to switch Mega Upload back on this date for this amount of time. You can go in and get your files and then we'll switch it off again. And so obviously people would get access to their legitimate files, but people would also get access to their illegitimate files. And there's no real way around that, but it would overcome the issue of people having been entirely locked out of content that is their own, and their only mistake was putting it on a service that it turned out may have been acting illegally and so was taken down by the US authorities. So that's difficult. The other issue that's come along with that is it's been such a long time that this has been in process that we've had issues with the server companies. Initially, the server companies who had housed those servers agreed to keep those computers to one side so that they could be accessed for evidence or giving back people their legitimate files at a later date. But as this rode on and on and on, those companies started saying, we can't do this forever. There's a cost to having these computers out of action, even if they're not switched on. And you know, we've got space that they're taking up that we could be using. In some cases, just by being switched off for so long, the servers degraded and possibly wouldn't even have worked if you had turned them back on. There was one big company in the US that went to court over this. There was a company in Holland, someone asked them what they were doing with the data and they just went, oh, we deleted that ages ago.
Yes, gone. You can't have it. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the idea that just reconnect everything for 48 hours, which would have been the sensible thing. Yes, people would have been able to access their music and movies that were illegal for 48 hours. But I mean,
they can do that anyway.
They can do that anyway. So it's not like anyone's going to get access to anything.
Taking Mega Upload offline did not stop piracy.
So to do it for 48 hours would have been the right thing to do. But you would have to have done that pretty quickly after the whole thing happened. Because as you say, even those companies, mainly the American ones, who have still got the servers, but they're not connected. It would be quite a lot of work to reconnect them. And then, as you also say, they may not even work once you've reconnected them. And then you've got those servers that have already been deleted. And I do feel that actually this does portray the music and movie industries as being hypocrites and makes it difficult for the music and movie industries in the wider copyright debate. Because the music and movie industries are constantly saying, we need people, we want people, we demand people to respect our copyright, to respect our intellectual property rights. And I would agree with that. But then they're sort of turning around and saying, oh, but your copyright, your intellectual property, we don't care about that. You know, providing we protect our copyright, we gladly see your copyright deleted. And actually, by not showing more interest in these people who lost their content when Mega Upload was shut down, that actually is damaging to the reputation of the music and movie industries, which then damages their ability to fight for more tighter copyright protection down the line. I mean, ultimately, I think the prosecutors should have taken the initiative and they didn't. But the music and movie industry certainly didn't help, because whenever the Mega Upload side were saying, or the server companies you mentioned were saying, well, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this, the music and movie companies saying, oh, we don't want that. And then the prosecutors were like, okay, we won't do that. And the courts were like, well, we've got to do something. But it does sort of feel the moment has passed and that data is now all lost. And that's a shame.
Now, the other reason this has been in the news is because Kim.com, as well as having a lot of time taken up with the ongoing legal battles to make nothing happen, he's set up other companies in this time using the Mega Upload, or using the Mega brand. He launched another online backup service called Mega, which he felt was safer and less likely to be taken down than Mega Upload was. He also launched, I think, Megabox, which was later called Baboom.
Which he was actually working on before the takedown.
Yes. In fact, there was a conspiracy theory, possibly started by Kim.com, that Mega Upload had been taken down because he was about to start this direct-to-fan service that was just going to kill all record labels. I mean, I think it was Kim.com who started that rumor.
Probably.
But he went on and built this thing as a standalone service. Do you remember that launch video for it, which portrayed it as this huge operation? People were building this amazing service. I mean, it never really got off the ground. It launched with, well, there's another thing. Kim.com launched a music career during all this. He released an album that he released on Baboom. And that was the first thing and possibly the only thing that was ever released on Baboom. He also released that on CD. I still have a CD of it.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, because I met the guy who was CEO of Baboom once and he was like, do you want a CD of Kim's album? I was like, yes, I do.
So, yeah, we had the Mega all-new digital locker service. We had the Baboom, as it became, which was Mega's attempt to sort of enter the direct-to-fan space and completely reinvent the music industry, blah, blah, blah.
And in fact, I mean, that struggled because of its association with Kim.com, and ultimately it cut ties with Kim.com.
He stepped away from both of those businesses, ultimately. In addition to that and the legal woes and the pop career you mentioned, he was also a politician in New Zealand for a while. He set up a political party and he was trying to do political stuff. So he's been very active in those 7 years since the collapse of Mega Upload, but he's not been having to write twice monthly reports like we have, keeping us busy on all of the various developments, the extradition case in New Zealand, the litigation in America, the lost data, and all of it. And as we've said several times on this podcast, I mean, almost one of the reasons why we left this one to pretty late in this series of our 20th anniversary specials was in case something of significance happened and the end would be, oh, he's being extradited. Although, as we've already said, even then, actually, this is still just chapter one, because if he does get extradited, we've got the whole court case and all the safe harbor stuff still to come in America.
I definitely think we could do a part two of this at some point down the line, maybe in 7 years' time.
Well, it does sort of feel almost we'll still be talking about this in another 20 years' time, but who knows? But I think, as of today, that is the Mega Upload saga pretty much brought up to date.
Yes, I think that brings us nicely up to date. Hopefully nothing happens between now and this episode going out. Fairly sure it won't, because, you know, nothing's happened yet. But yes, for now, that is the end of the Mega Upload saga and the end of this episode. This has been an episode of Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by me, Andy Malt, and Chris Cook. It's edited by Jason Wolfe. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com. Mega Upload. Mega Upload. G.